Yeah, let's go out of here because John Carley and Cherry Alker are coming up next. God bless you in these crazy times. Thanks for putting up with my lousy voice today.
All right. Welcome to the John Carley, Cherry Alker show. Jack Stein sitting in for John Carley. I feel like I have ring rust. I feel like I'm rusty. I haven't done this for 2 whole weeks. How am I going to do this, Jacob? Sherry, how am I going to perform at the level that I need to perform at? What if something goes wrong?
Well, you are among friends. Yeah, go ahead.
We understand if you need to let's go out of here, as Joey says. I don't know. It makes even less sense when I say it somehow.
Yeah, no, that's okay. But do you guys get that when you take a break and then you come back to doing the job that you are very good at, critically acclaimed, highly rated, respected amongst management, peers, so on and so forth? I could keep talking about me, but you understand what I'm saying? Then you take a break and then you come back and it's like, am I as good as everybody says that I am? Am I still operating at that level? Do I still have it? Am I still, you know what I mean? That's how
I
feel.
Yeah, right, I know. These are questions for the ages. I mean, my goodness, you're just having a moment of a lack of confidence, and you shouldn't, because yes, you are that good, Jack Stein. And we had Jim Dever on, and what he agreed to, because he was the first time I was leading the show, what he agreed to is if anything goes wrong, he takes the blame for it. Remember that, Jacob? So it's okay. Yeah. So if anything goes wrong today, it's totally his fault.
He didn't put a time limit on that offer, so we've just taken advantage of it.
It can be anytime, anywhere. Yeah. So he's the one to look at if there's a problem. So you're off the hook.
Good. I enjoy nothing more in my professional life than blaming other people for my shortcomings, both personal and professional.
It's so important to be able to establish blame. So important.
So very important. Speaking of establishing blame, Sherry, who do we blame in this instance of a boomer shooting a young man? Can you walk us through this?
Yeah, so this happened at a Safeway in Gig Harbor, and a 70-year-old man was arrested because he shot a 40-year-old man because he mistakenly thought that the guy was stealing something. I think we have something from Como.
If anyone has a good grasp on the town of Gig Harbor, it would be Al Hansen.
Yeah, we've lived at 3 different locations in Gig Harbor.
3 locations over the span of about 40 years. But while at the Safeway on Point Fosdick Drive, waiting for his wife to finish inside the store, he was unaware that this very spot was a crime scene less than 24 hours earlier.
I just heard it on the radio, so I'm on the spot unknowingly.
Which is how many folks we spoke with responded when we told them about what happened here last night, when a 70-year-old man tried stopping a 40-year-old who he thought was trying to steal from the store. In the midst of the confusion, Gig Harbor police says a fight broke out between the two, and the 70-year-old pulled out a gun and shot the 40-year-old, striking him and a glass door near the entrance. In the daylight, the store has now blocked that broken glass with cardboard, but it leaves an uneasy feeling for most folks shopping.
Wow, that's getting too close to home.
We reached out to Gig Harbor Police for more information, but the department's chief told us no one was available today, but could potentially be available to speak with us tomorrow.
The 70-year-old was taken by Gig Harbor Police to the Pierce County Jail. We're told the 40-year-old suffered non-life-threatening injuries.
Is that a radio, or not a radio, is that a broadcasting trope, Sherry? At the very beginning of that, Jacob, can you play the first, I want to say 8 seconds? That
if anyone has a good grasp on the town of Gig Harbor, it would be Al Hansen.
Yes, right there. Okay, so Sherry, do you know what I'm talking about? Where this seems to be ubiquitous wherever you go in news media. They go, if anybody knows anything about X, it's this person. And then that person says, I've been doing this for 30 years. Do you know what I mean? Is that kind of been done to death at this point in time?
Yeah, I guess it's a way, though, to establish the story, right? So you can say, okay, they've been going to this Safeway for 40 years and nothing like this has ever happened. And if anybody knows anything about the Safeway, it's these people, because they've been here for 150 years. So it's just this way to kind of lay the groundwork, I guess, for this shocking story.
Right.
This 70-year-old shooting a 40-year-old because I guess the 70-year-old thought that he was, what, security, or that he was protecting someone. one. I mean, nobody has heard his side of the story or why he thought it was appropriate to take matters into his own hand with his own gun. But it happened. And thankfully, the 40-year-old is going to be okay.
I'm kind of stuck on this, though, because we don't use that phrase in common conversation. Like, if I was introducing, for instance, John Curley to somebody, just to someone who doesn't know who John is, if I said, if anybody knows anything about ranting about COVID-19, it's John Curley, and then smash cut to John going, I've been ranting, raving about COVID-19 for the past 3 years. No one ever, we don't do that in real life, so I wonder why they do it in this packaged way that news media likes to do over and over and over again. It seems like so fake and so conceited in so many ways.
Well, you watch the news, it's a little fake and conceited. And it's also that the way that they talk on the news is not the way we talk in conversation.
Right.
So you would be much more casual about something, an introduction in conversation. You wouldn't necessarily have to use that same setup, right? You wouldn't say that. But yeah, that's the kind of thing that local news does a lot, you know, where they have this person standing there and, you know, or this is another big one. Looking behind me, or if you look behind me, there's the store that blah, blah, blah. They always like to show you what's behind them.
Behind me is the place where this horrific attempted murder almost took place.
Right.
And the reason that I point that out is because this is a horrific instance, but they have made the decision to kind of paint by numbers, if that makes sense, on something that is otherwise pretty awful. You have a boomer who believes that a man is stealing stuff from a Safeway. In his rational brain, thinks, I need to shoot this man in order to stave off injustice. This is pretty bad, right? I mean, this is an attempted murder, and to try to make it this like kind of fun paint by numbers news media piece, I think is a little. No, I'm not coming down on Cuomo. Everybody does this. I'm saying that we should get away from it. We should move away from it. Maybe try to freshen it up a little bit.
Well, I'm afraid that the man that shot at the guy didn't get the memo that shoplifting in the state of Washington is legal. So he probably didn't realize that and thought, oh, I'm going to, you know, be a vigilante here and try to do something to save the loaf of bread or whatever it is. And I don't think they ever determined whether or not the guy had actually stolen something. I don't think that he did. I think it was just that the guy was trying to avenge the Safeway.
So if you, Sherry, are witnessing, let's just say that you're in the fine state of Washington where shoplifting is legal. Actually, you know, let's say that we live in a bizarro world where if you steal something, you get arrested. Let's just say that we live in that weird alternative universe in the state of Washington. You see somebody shoplifting. Your first thought is to do what as a rational human being?
I guess my first thought would be to alert somebody in a position to stop them, or I probably wouldn't call the police because they would get away before the police would get there.
Okay.
So I mean, I would just I guess I would just let somebody know that that there was somebody stealing something. What would you do?
Well, okay, let me go down the list here. Okay, Sherry, not a gun, is what I'm gonna write. Jacob, you see somebody shoplifting from a Safeway. Where do you shop, Jacob?
I actually shop at a Whole Foods, which
excellent.
I kind of
okay.
hate.
No, good. That's a great. I shop at Whole Foods as well. So you see somebody shoplifting.
Yeah.
Your first thought is to do what?
Join them. Seems like fun.
Right, and it's legal, so you might as well.
Right. So, Andrew, just as an instance, you are shopping at the dollar store and you see somebody shoplifting. What do you do in that instance?
I probably just leave.
Right. Right. These are all great answers.
I wouldn't take out my phone and start filming him. I wouldn't do that.
Even better. Right now, what would I do is I would alert somebody, alert the proper authorities. This is what I'm trying to tease apart here. What goes through somebody's mind that says, oh, that guy's taking a loaf of Dave's bread. I'm going to shoot him. Like, that is a particular kind of human being. And I don't it's so far removed from 99% of society that it's almost like an alien. I feel like we're analyzing some kind of alien creature within the human race that decides that the thing to do when someone is stealing some Chobani yogurt is to pull out a 9mm and try to kill them. This is like, this is much broader than the gun control problem. This is a personality archetype that Freud could have never predicted. Somebody is doing something wrong that's like a one on the scale of crime, and our response is to try to injure that person. That's what I don't understand, and this is what keeps me up at night, Sherry. This is the kind of thing that I just toss and turn, and I go, why? Why would somebody do this to themselves? Not only to the other person, but to themselves.
Excellent question, and it remains to be seen. My only thought would be that maybe this gentleman had seen so much footage of the smash and grab
yes.
robberies that went on, or the shoplifting that's so blatant that no one ever gets apprehended or arrested, there are no, you know, ramifications for anybody anymore when it comes to shoplifting. Maybe he was just so fed up that he decided that he had had enough. There's more to this story, for sure, because you're right. It's too extreme for it to be on what it is at face value. It can't just be guy sees a guy, you know, getting a bottle of orange juice and decides that that's, you know, man, I am really mad about that.
Yes.
And, you know,
right.
just, you know, locks and loads it. So I don't think that's it. I think there has to be more either about his mental health or about something that triggered him.
That is the That is the speculation that in our text line right now. They do mention that there was some type of kind of fight that broke out, and so maybe that was more of the
okay.
driver of the violence. And you know, the impetus was the supposed or suspected shoplifting, but then maybe it just kind of spiraled out of control, which could be certainly plausible as well.
Did you guys ever see the video that went viral a couple years back? It's a guy at a Walmart in Arkansas, and he is attempting to rob the woman at the checkout counter with a butcher knife that he has just stolen from Walmart. So he walks in, gets a butcher knife, walks up to the cash register, and then threatens the woman with it. And this is all caught on security cam. The guy who's about two people back in line pulls out his firearm, points it at the guy, and the guy with the butcher knife drops the butcher knife and starts crying, and then the guy with the gun says, "I'll pray for you, brother, I'll pray for you," and they play like inspirational music underneath it, and then that guy later went on to like go to community college or something like that. But do you think that maybe we have too many, we have kind of a... I don't know what you want to call it, like a too much of a rosy view of what it means to be a vigilante. We have too much of a rosy perspective of what it means to be the quote-unquote hero in a certain circumstance. So then when it comes up, when the opportunity arises, someone thinks, I'm going to be on Good Morning America with Gail King, and I'm going to be telling the story about how I saved these bagels from this awful man. Do you know what I mean? That we maybe have encouraged this kind of behavior as a society by holding up vigilantes, as we should, but we maybe give people the wrong message in so many ways. That's what I'm teasing out from this, because this doesn't happen in a vacuum. Someone has to go through the mental process of deciding, I'm going to be Batman today. I'm going to be the hero. I am vengeance. See what I'm saying?
Right. And there are people out there that really do believe that they are doing the right thing by trying to correct a problem, or by coming to the aid of somebody else with violence or with a gun. But it rarely turns out that way. It usually doesn't work out in their favor. Somebody usually ends up getting hurt, or they end up getting in trouble for it because they are not on the right side of the law, because they took something into their own hands and they shouldn't have done that. In this particular case, we need to be corrected here. The guy did get into a fight, apparently, and that's
okay.
what created the violent act against the gunshot against the guy. So it might have, obviously, the accusation of shoplifting triggered this other guy to get mad at the older guy, and that's when the shooting happened. So, and if anybody knows about that, it's that guy that lives in Gig Harbor for 30 years.
That's what I mean, though, is that I think that, and even just like teasing this story apart, the idea that we need to escalate. I feel like this is something, and I could be wrong about this. I'm totally willing to be wrong about this. I feel like this is something that has gone up over the last 2 or 3 years, where you have people saying, I'm going to bring my gun to the next parent-teacher meeting or whatever it is, or the next school board meeting. Or this idea that every circumstance where there is just like a hint of crime going on, we need to have firearms or whatever it is. I feel like this is a new element that is resurgent in our kind of social milieu. We had it back in the prairie days when people were carrying six shooters all over the place. And now we have it in a Safeway in Gig Harbor. And I'm not a fan of it. I got to say that. I am a fan, though, of traffic god Chris Sullivan with pectoral muscles, huge calf muscles. Chris Sullivan, paragon of physical health and physical fitness. How are you, my friend?
I'm very good. Matter of fact, I got a good workout in this afternoon in preparation, knowing that you were filling in.
Yes.
Not to discount you at all, I know, Sherry, but Jack really likes my pecs.
What yeah, big old pec muscles.
Wow. I'll give you two a moment, please.
Yeah, you know, we get a little blue on the night show, from 7 to 10.
Really?
We get a little
working blue, yeah.
Yeah, got to bring it down a little bit.
Chris Sullivan has just long Fabio-esque hair, and he's just got these, unbelievable separation in all of the muscle groupings in his body. It's like he's carved out of marble. So when he comes into the studio on the night's show, I can't help but remark at the Adonis-like physique that is Chris Sullivan. It's truly amazing.
Jack, this is quite a bromance. I am I'm a little uncomfortable right now.
Okay. Just imagine Jacob with bigger muscles but no mustache.
I'm doing that right now.
Good.
Perfect.
And end the show.
All right. Keel Mortgage, best in the business, 1-888-778-KIEL. Proud sponsors of the John Curley, Sherry Elliker radio program. John usually has a fun story about mortgages. I don't have a mortgage, so we'll just wait for John to come in and do that portion of it. But once again, proud sponsors, Keel Mortgage, 1-888-778-K and I and E and an L. Sherry, are you a fan of Diane Keaton? Is this an actress that you look up to? Do you look at Diane Keaton's body of work and think, wow, what an important human being?
I like the way you enunciated that, though. Diane Keaton.
Diane Keaton.
I mean, I like Diane Keaton. I think she was really good in a lot of movies. I think she did one too many sort of rom-coms that were called, Oh No You Didn't, or You Can Say That Again, or whatever the names of those movies were.
Two can play at that game.
Right.
That
I mean, so, yeah, she kind of got into that thing a little bit, but I think she's a good actress. I think she's interesting. She's a little kooky, but she's okay. And she's written a book now.
And it's all about how she's a sociopath, from what I understand, who doesn't listen to music and doesn't look...
It's a book called Saved, and these are images that she's collected, Jack, over the years. So she's got a section called horror movies. She's got one called dogs, one about diseases of the mouth, because she's sort of obsessed with teeth. But in this New York Times article about Diane Keaton and about this book that she's written, they asked her a pretty simple question, as they asked her about her, what do you eat? What do you wear? Those kinds of things. And they said, do you listen to music? And here's what she said. She said, I don't play it very often. I don't want it around because it reminds me of things that make me sad or that I miss. I use it sometimes when I'm acting. I play a little so I can get myself really involved in a scene. It takes you back to moments in time and people that meant more than anything. The New York Times thought, I'm sorry, this is Wall Street Journal. Wall Street Journal thought this was so significant that they actually made this the headline, and they highlighted it in the article. Why Diane Keaton almost never listens to music. That's the headline.
And then we learned, Sherry, in the pre-show meeting that you too are cut from the same cloth. That's another rom-com right there, rom-com title.
That was a movie, wasn't it? Cut from the same cloth, starring Diane Keaton.
We learned that you and Diane Keaton are both equal sociopaths because you totally agreed with this. You said, I hate music. Anytime my husband plays music in the other room, I go in there and I flip the table over and I said, don't do that in this house.
That's exactly what I said.
You feel similarly though about music, this idea that we play music and that it's bad times, not good times.
It can be really powerful, and it can make me feel sad sometimes, and it can make me remember things, and sometimes I just don't want to go there. I don't want to hear a song that makes me sad. I don't want to hear a song that brings back any kind of memories. Music, I like it, and it's fine, but I don't seek it out. I don't care about new music. I don't care about, you know, anything.
Wow.
It's never been a thing for me. It's never been something that I have pursued. And what's kind of crazy about it is that music has been in my life. My previous husband was a musician. My dad was a part-time musician in a band. I worked in music radio. So you would think that music would be sort of part of the fabric of my life or part of my DNA or something. And it really isn't. It really isn't at all.
So if we were to play, just as an instance, if we were to play a little game where we play a little Michael Bublé, mm-hmm. and we get a little.
Right.
How does this now? Do you feel anger, rage, murderous intent? How do you feel listening to Bublé?
Okay, so this particular song brings my memory back to when I did a radio show on Sirius XM, and I kind of miss it. You know, I had a really good time doing that show, and I really enjoyed it. And so, yeah, it's sort of, you know, it's sentimental, it's bittersweet. So. I don't always like to feel those. I don't like, you know, I love the, you know, the ice running through my veins and the lack of emotion that I have. I'm very safe there. I don't want to go there.
I thought you were going to say, oh yeah, this is, I took a man's life with my bare hands listening to this song.
Well, that too.
Okay, so if we, let's just move on from this and let's go to something a little bit more, if we played a little Crosby, Stills, and Nash, how does this, how does this make you feel? If we play a little?
Ugh, what a horrible song.
Yeah.
Ugh, gross. Rage. I cannot stand this song. I can't stand them. I really hate that band.
Yeah.
They drone on and on, and it's just, it doesn't go anywhere, and it's just like the lyrics are dreadful, and I know they're like a classic, and everybody's gonna go, oh, they're so great, they're wonderful.
They're not.
I can't. Oh, good. I'm glad you agree.
This is like I've never seen anybody fail upwards in the same way that Crosby, Stills, and Nash have failed upwards, and they're not. It's not a good band. It's like a bad open mic band, and everyone's like, oh, dude, you got to get into Crosby, Stills, and Nash.
Yeah.
Okay. So. What if we move on a little bit,
okay.
and what if
All
we
right.
go to something? What if we go to something a little bit more, you know, a little bit more country, a little bit less rock and roll, and that's another rom-com right there.
There
little
you go.
Bit, okay, and we do a little Dolly Parton. How do you feel about this one? Yeah.
Okay, I feel this is uplifting. I have no real attachment to this song. I don't have any real memory of it. I didn't see the movie. And I like Dolly Parton, so I'm okay with this on our psychological test as it moves along, just to find the weakest part of me.
I again thought that you were going to say, I took a man's life with an ice pick in Reno listening to this song with a smile on my face.
No,
but no,
remember? Yeah. I took the man's life with the first song. Get it right, Jack. Diane Keaton.
And Diane Keaton. And then finally, so if we go in the way, way, way back machine, and this was a band that even my deaf mother loved this band. She loved to feel the vibration in the record player to the Monkees. If we play this, how do you feel about this?
Here we come. Walk down the street, get funniest
looks fun. How does it make you feel?
I love the Monkees, yeah. The Monkees, when I was a little girl, I had a crush on Mickey. And I was like, I was very little. And there was a TV guide, and it had the picture of the Monkees on it. And I kissed the TV guide. My sister and I took it back and forth. And I kissed the TV guide where Mickey was. And I think it was Mickey Dolenz, and put a hole in the TV guide because I was kissing it so much because I loved him so much. See?
Oh man, so. I gotta tell you my Mickey Dolan story when we get back, because it's a really, not a lot of people in this world have a Mickey Dolan story the way that I have a Mickey Dolan story. So let's just do that when we get back. Yeah, Chris Sullivan, how do you feel about that? You want to hear about my experience with Mickey Dolan's?
I hope it's that you kissed Mickey Dolan and no. That chair's going to be really jealous.
And you put a hole in him, not just the TV guy.
So weird. okay, so Chris, what's going on in the world of traffic?
Well, yeah, I stabbed a guy in Reno once, but that's just because he made me listen to that last segment.
All right. So about 8 years ago, maybe 9 years ago, Mickey Dolenz was playing at the Santa Cruz Beach Boardwalk. They have a little like a stage set up in the middle of the beach, and it's really nice. And you've seen it, Sherry. So mm-hmm. Smash yeah, Mouth nice. Comes and all these like C-list bands, basically, like Whitesnake shows up and stuff like that. So Mickey Dolenz was playing, and my mom begged me to go. She said, "I love Mickey Dolenz." My mom is totally deaf. She is stone deaf, and yet as a child, she was infatuated with the Monkees because she could play the record and feel through the speakers the Monkees, and so that was the kind of music that she liked. So she says, all of my deaf friends are going. Will you please come with me? And I go, okay, Mom, I will go watch this old band play songs. I'm fine with that. So we go, and Mickey Dolenz is there, and he is really good. And I don't want to short the guy. He is a very talented musician, and he's doing covers, and he's doing originals, and he's very funny. And his sister, I think her name is Candy, is there as well, and she's a backup singer. And in between every song, he's telling these really funny stories about hanging out with John Lennon and doing cocaine, and hanging out with Jimi Hendrix and doing cocaine, and hanging out with Harry Nilsson and doing cocaine. He just would not stop talking about doing drugs with all these different people from back in the day. And everybody was laughing and laughing and laughing. But it was still like a PG show. So he wasn't saying cocaine explicitly. He was just sniffing heavily into the microphone. You know how people do that when they're trying mm-hmm. to be cutesy? So we just go, yeah. Me and John Lennon were hanging out with mm-hmm. Mama Cass. And it was kind of weird. But
it's weird.
Yeah, but I mean, I knew what was going on, but my mom is like, what is he doing? So the show ends, and my mom says to me, my mom pressures me into these circumstances because she's not a very good mom and she has poor boundaries, but she says, I want to meet Mickey Dolenz. And I go, I don't want to go bug him. And she says, I want to meet Mickey Dolenz. So we go around to the side of the stage where he and the band are. They literally have been done with the show for maybe 5 to 7.5 minutes. We go around to the side, and some fashion, get Mickey Dolenz's attention. I make eye contact with him, and I wave at him. And I go, my mom would like to meet you. And he was a nice enough guy to walk up to us. And he says, hello. And then I go, my mom is a deaf woman. And he goes, oh, well, like he's really interested that a deaf woman would want to come and see him play. And so he does the thing that many people do when they meet deaf people, which is they talk louder. Mm-hmm. You know? So he goes, it's very nice to meet you. And I go, you don't need to do that, Mickey Dolenz. And then he goes, I know what I'm doing. What's your name? And so he's basically shouting at my mom, who's just smiling and nodding, because Mickey Dolenz doesn't know that when you shout at deaf people, they can't read your lips. So,
he thought by talking louder, she could see his mouth move, and that he was, you know, enunciating like Diane Keaton. He thought
like
that
Diane
she was doing
Keaton.
That. But instead, it was more. It's more that it's harder to read the lips, right?
Much harder. And so my mom is just smiling and nodding because that's what she does in those circumstances. And she's also meeting her like childhood crush, right? So
yeah.
Finally, I was like, "Do you mind if we take a picture?" And he goes, "Oh, sure!" And he's so loud. we got a picture with Mickey Dolenz. But if I ever met him again, I would say, hey, guy, I don't know if you know this, but like, you don't have to yell around deaf people because they can't hear anything. It doesn't matter how loud you are. can't hear a single thing. So that's
how
my
cool
Mickey
for
Dolan
your
story.
Mom, though. I mean, how cool that she got to meet him and that you helped her out. And you, I bet she still has that picture, doesn't she?
She does. Yeah, I hated every moment of it, though. Because that's
well,
me and my like. Because I like, I'm a very panicky, neurotic guy, and so you put me in a circumstance where I have to flag down Mickey Dolenz, introduce him to my mom, interpret while this is going on, and then also try to like quiet down Mickey Dolenz because I don't want to draw attention to myself. I'm like, you don't have to, Mr. Dolenz, you don't have to do that. Oh, I know what I'm doing. I know what I'm doing. What's your name? He's shouting at full volume. It was a great evening in the life of Jack Stein.